You're listening to a CNA podcast.
What are some real challenges that older workers face in the workplace?
It's harder to learn new things when we are getting old. It could lead to some self-confidence issue as well.
What about attitude changes though?
I cannot learn as fast as I had been before. I've been so used to the old ways of learning new things.
So how can companies really tap into this pool of mature workers or the seniors among us?
We can encourage the older workers to take on the mentorship role.
Hi everyone, this is Tiffany and you're listening to Work It, a podcast where we figure out how to work better because we're going to be spending more than a third of our lives doing that. I'm running solo today because the show today is slightly different. This podcast episode is part of the inaugural Ideas Festival. You can find out more at www.ideasfestival.edu.sg. But we're still going to do the Ask Me Anything segment where I'll ask Gerald a work-related question and he'll help me navigate it. This week's question is, how do I disconnect from work while on a holiday if my colleagues or boss aren't leaving me alone? We'll get to that after the main discussion. Now, back to today's topic. It's a special one for me because throughout my career so far, I've been working in large companies and I've benefited from a lot of advice given to me by co-workers who are older than me. Most of them, I would say, are generally good. But I do often hear other younger workers complain that sometimes the mature ones among us may be a bit traditional in their own ways, and they don't want to move with the times. And funny enough, some of these older workers do also come and tell me, don't try and teach this old dog new tricks. So today we want to try and understand what are some challenges that seniors in the workplace face and how can companies help them be better at their work. With me today is Professor Yao-Wei Quinn. She's Head of Humanities, Arts and Social Sciences at the Singapore University of Technology and Design. Welcome, Prof.
Hello.
So, Prof, I understand that you specialise in lifespan development. That's a big word to me. Can you explain what it means?
What I do is to investigate the different challenges when people develop from young to older age. So that's what we call the lifespan development.
Oh, so you track people from when they are young all the way to when they are old. I mean, not specifically someone, but you track the different age groups.
So I can't really track them per se because I have to live very long
<That's true. laughs>
to do that. But we tend to do some cross-sectional studies and we also look at longitudinal databases where people have already collected data for a longer time.
Okay.
So I started my research career looking at children, specifically preschoolers, like 3 to 6 years old. So developmental psychology, that's what we usually refer it to them. And then as I do more research in the field, I realized that we need to look at the lifespan. So we don't just stop at preschools, but I'm very interested in how people change in terms of their cognitive abilities, in terms of their social cognitive abilities. How does it change across a lifespan? So that's why I am now in my research not only looking at young children, I'm looking at adolescents, I'm also looking at older people.
When I talk to people, I always think that there's always a personal story behind why they study what they study. I mean, you spend years doing this. So what is your personal story? Why did you choose this?
When I was doing my PhD at Stanford, one of the professors who specialised in career development said that actually there's this theory called the happenstance theory.
Okay.
Which means that whatever happened to us in terms of career and life is not something that you really plan for.
Okay.
So things happened along the way. So I didn't start it off with a mind of wanting to do a PhD because I thought it relates to like a permanent head damage.
And it's a very big commitment.
Yes, in a way. So I started off just interested in psychology.
Okay.
Because I'm very fascinated with how people behave, people think. So I just wanted to do like a master's degree. But then when I was there, one of the professors says, why don't you do a PhD, right, in it? And I felt very inspired in the kind of environment that I was in. And so I decided to pursue my PhD without really thinking too much about what it will lead me to, but really just a pure kind of interest and passion towards it. So I started with developmental psychology because I kind of like children. And where I was doing my psychology is a very famous professors in child development. So I started with that. And as I moved towards to the end of my PhD, my advisor told me that, hey, Quinn, you know, perhaps you like to think about studying older people as well. And I said, why? Then she says, for one, let's be practical. Actually, a lot of people are getting old.
That's
like,
true.
Actually, everybody will get old.
Yeah, we have an aging population problem here in Singapore.
Yes, and she says that a lot of funding opportunities will also come with it. So she told
sense.
Me that.
Yeah.
And actually, not a lot of attention has been put in to look at this kind of generational developmental perspective. And I thought that perhaps my training in developmental psychology can actually inform how I understand the field in gerontology. Mm. So that's how I get into this field.
Mm-hmm. I also did a bit of research on you and I noticed that you also studied statistics, non-STEM and STEM. So how do you combine these two to help with your research?
Mm. So from the STEM perspective, it's a tool that I use to systematically research and understand social and human phenomena. So that's a very important tool. And the stats part is important because I need to understand the data. But the training from the humanities and social science is very crucial because it gives me the kind of perspective and the nuances to understand the cultural context. So certain phenomena will only be applicable to certain subgroup of people or to a certain subgroup of culture. And so this is important, the kind of nuances that we are trained in that we can contribute. In SUTD, we actually espouse interdisciplinary collaboration. So in my work, in my research, I actually collaborate quite intimately with engineers, with architects.
Interesting.
Computer scientists, because we together, we can actually develop, create innovative solutions that really have impact to the life of the people in the society.
Let's dive deeper into aging, specifically in the workplace, because I pulled out some stats. According to the Manpower Ministry, 1 in 4 workers in our resident workforce are aged 55 years and above. So people are retiring later. We don't want to be ageists here, but as someone who has studied this in depth, what are some real challenges that older workers face in the workplace?
So there are actually a few characteristics that actually distinguishes the younger workers and the older workers. The first one is the cognitive aspect. In psychology, a more famous model we call the crystallized intelligence versus the fluid intelligence. Crystallized intelligence refers to more facts and knowledge that you already gained throughout your life.
Okay.
And fluid intelligence is something about ability to learn new knowledge or apply
like adaptability.
A new environment, for example. Let's say you haven't visited Vancouver before, the first time you go to Vancouver is new to you, then you need to learn how to adapt to the situation, understand the nuances, the culture. So that requires flexibility. So speed of process. Processing is also fluid intelligence. Crystallized is the knowledge. So how much you already know about Vancouver, for example. So of course, we need both abilities. So actually, a lot of studies have shown that fluid intelligence peak around 20 to 25.
Okay.
And then it kind of starts to decline. So therefore, if you ask me to do an integration problem now, integration and differentiation problem, I probably cannot do it.
No, neither can I. Don't worry.
As far as young people. Mm. So there is a reason for that. And also, for example, gaming. You can find that young people can actually do gaming a lot faster.
Yeah.
The reflexes are better.
Yes.
So there is this science behind the reason for the decline.
Okay.
But at the same time, older people gain in crystallized knowledge. So they get a lot of experience. They build in the repertoire of expertise and also vocabulary. So that will actually peaks and you can still increase all the way up to 65.
Okay.
Not a problem at all.
I see.
So because of these biological differences, that kind of explains why we say that it's harder to learn new things if we are getting old. Mm. So there's nothing too wrong about it. It's just perfectly normal. But the style of learning can be different. Mm. So when you are younger, you can able to switch between things very fast.
Mm.
You can pick up relationship very fast. You can do abstract reasoning very fast. But you may not able to utilize the expert knowledge because you don't have, you're young.
Mm.
But as an older worker, the way you want to learn new things will be a different approach. So you will want to rely on your expert knowledge and understand how the different pieces might come together.
I see.
And help you to learn better.
So when you are older, you can see the different jigsaw puzzles and piece them together.
Mm, yes, that's right.
Okay. What about attitude changes though? I mean, does that shift with age?
Mm. When you're younger, you tend to care a lot more about your identity, your role. You're
true.
Trying to figure out who you are, where you fit.
Yeah.
And so you're exploring about your life.
And you care about what people think of you.
You care about what people think about you. You care about relationships.
Yes, that's right.
You care about social networks. So in some of the psychosocial theories, this stage of life is very important for you to make connections with people. And when you get older, you tend to want to feel able to contribute back to the society.
Okay.
So therefore, mentorship is really the perfect timing for the older worker to take an active role in because you already built up a lot of expert knowledge and experience, and you also feel like you want to contribute back to people, to society, and you want to seek meaningfulness and purpose in life. And so that's where the two different age group can be different in terms of their outlook. In life.
But you also see that when it's older, their fluid intelligence kind of declines, right? So in that sense, does that also add on to their belief that, you know what, I don't want to learn new things. I am happy the way I am. This is who I am. You just have to accept it.
Definitely, because we have been used to being able to do it fast.
Oh, okay.
Right? Because we have been young before. So when we became older, some of these abilities kind of decline. It could lead to some self-confidence issue as well. Like, okay, but I cannot learn as fast as I had been before. So does it mean it's something not good in me, right? And so that could also lead to the fact that maybe I don't want to learn this anymore because I don't feel comfortable learning it because I've been so used to the old ways of learning new things and I felt like I'm not able to do the same as well as before.
So how can companies really tap into this pool of mature workers or the seniors among us to be of better value in the company and also to feel more fulfilled with their own role?
Let me address this in two perspectives.
Sure.
So one from the company perspective and the other one is a university perspective.
Okay.
So from the company's perspective, because the older workers, they really have a very rich experience. So where we could look at is we can encourage the older workers to take on the mentorship role. Of course, from the company's perspective, they can think about getting some training programs to equip the older workers with the confidence and the skills to guide younger people. At the same time, the mature workers can also have a better understanding of the profile and the working style of the younger people to bridge that kind of communication gap. In both the university and the companies, actually, what we can do is we call the cross-functional teams that we can actually put in both the older people and the younger people together in the same team.
How would this cross-function team look like?
So, for example, okay, let's start with the university.
Okay.
So, from the university, we can co-create curriculum. So, for example, in SUTD, we try to encourage industry people to come in as mentors to guide the younger students. And so, from that perspective, it's actually a very good experience already that they gain, the younger students. How do they work with the experienced industry workers? The kind of working styles, the working behavior, and also the perspective. And the older workers can become the role model for the younger people. So this kind of co-creation of curriculum, including the industry and the younger people, for example, in SUDD, where this relationship between students and enterprise is symbiotic. Yeah. So from there, they gain experience. So that should actually give a good foundation of the younger workers going out to work.
Yes.
At the same time, for the older workers, they also can see and learn from the younger people, younger workers, younger students, and they can also learn from them and create these interesting learning experiences between the two age groups.
Yeah, and I like that idea because then when the younger workers move officially into the workforce, it doesn't come off as a shock for the seniors that they are going, okay, this is a different generation. I haven't had any chance to work with them before. I don't know how they work. And then obviously that creates more conflict. So you bridge that gap where the older workers can become sort of not just mentors, but coaches. Right. And they also kind of solidify their own learning as well, because the best way to learn is to coach somebody because you're repeating some of your own lessons in your head.
Right. And kind of interesting exchange as well, because you kind of start to learn the different life experiences from each other. We also learn by observing other people. We learn by learning from their behavior. So then you're getting this situation where the older workers and the younger students in a non-threatening environment. That they can actually observe and learn from each other.
And in a company, I mean, because we were earlier on talking about this mentorship thing, does it have to be very structured or is it better when things are a bit more organic?
I think there needs to be a balance of both. Sometimes you need structure because people need to know what they need to achieve.
That's true.
Right? And especially if those without any experience in mentoring, sometimes they don't know what they need to do. And organic may become like, okay, let's have a tea, coffee, and then we're not too sure how to guide you along. So a balance of both is important. You need to have some kind of structure, some kind of guidance and framework to guide this mentorship forward. But at the same time, you want both parties to develop this organic relationship so that they build trust with each other, because without trust, they will not you know, you would not want to listen to the other person. You don't feel that you want to confide in that person. You may not want to listen to what that person has been sharing with you. So it is important to have the balance of both.
I mean, you have worked also with young people. What do you think younger people want out of this close relationship with somebody who's older in the workplace?
So interesting, younger people, actually they like to listen to stories.
Okay.
So they do like older people to tell them about their stories, you know, the kind of challenges they face.
But not from the World War II, right?
Probably not too distant.
Yeah.
But they also don't like people to tell them what to do.
Ah.
Right. So they don't feel like, okay, you know, you're wrong. You should not do this. You must do this because my experience shows me that this is right and this is wrong. In other words, we need to be more open-minded when we want to interact with, you know, each other, so that you're sharing your experiences. It's important to know that our experience may not directly relevant for that context, but it's important to share it with the younger workers so that they become like something that they can bag it with them.
Okay.
In case they need to
one day recall.
When they recall it, when they need it, they remember that story.
That's actually really good advice, because we sometimes laugh or tease about the fact that older people tend to have a lot more longer stories to tell. But you never know when some of these lessons can come up to the fore and you're reminded that, oh, okay, you did this at that point of time. I could try it. So rather than package it as this is me telling you what you should do, package it in a way that this is how I did it. If you feel that this works for you, maybe next time you can try.
Yes, exactly. So the key point is able to have an open mind and also to able to listen to each other. So from the older workers' perspective, before we jump in with our experiences, it's also good to listen what the younger workers got to share. So what are the challenges? So for example, just to share with you one story. So I have a younger worker, 25, worked with me as a research assistant. So at a point, he was kind of lost because he kind of liked research, but he also felt like maybe that's not what I might want to do. So if you listen to his struggle, his perspective, you're able to kind of share, okay, you know, you don't really need to be too worried about where you are now, because you never know what life's going to bring you. So what you can focus on is the things that you can learn from the job. You learn from the job, build good relationships, build good skills, and that can carry with you even if you change job.
How can organizations also help older workers feel that they are being valued by the company and not, you know, this is just the last job before retirement?
So I think upskilling is important. So what the government has been proposing, SkillsFuture, has been pushing ahead with SkillsFuture, continuous education learning. So all these CET trainings are very important, so that the older workers know that they have this opportunity and channels to upskill themselves, to pick up new skills so that they can develop further.
Yeah, that's true. It's not just about upskilling to move to another job.
Yes.
But it could be upskilling to stay within the company,
exactly,
but with a different role. Maybe something like you say, you know, a more mentorship role. Let's say, for example, if a boss comes up to you and say, Prof Quinn, I'm considering a new hire, somebody coming from outside. What is the benefit of hiring somebody who is perhaps more mature?
So usually what companies look for is the value that you can bring to the company. So when I hire somebody, I want to look at how much value this person can bring to the job and to the company. So as a mature worker, you can position yourself as, okay, you have the skills and you have the ability to learn new skills as well. So the past experiences you can share, okay, I have been done this and this, the things that I've learned before can actually translate into the work that I'm going to do in this company. So that's very important. And the skills, the exposure that older worker can bring into. So for example, I have worked with these different people, different contexts, different situations. I can bring in all these things together to maybe help the company to do more strategic planning. So those are some of the things that the mature workers can actually share with the hiring company, that these are the value that they can bring in for the company.
One of the things that I learned from listening to you share is about putting people of different age groups together. Don't wait until there's a conflict, or don't wait until somebody feels demotivated, that they don't feel like they are of any value anymore. And I hope that as you listen to this podcast, you learn something too, because, you know, definitely there will be somebody in your team, it could even be your boss, who is likely to be in their 40s, 50s, or even 60s. Thanks, Professor Quinn, for sharing your insights. We really, really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We're back with our Ask Me Anything segment where I pose a question to Gerald, my resident career shrink.
Tiffany, did you know that the term shrink was first used in the 40s as a slang to describe psychotherapists?
I think that you are that to me.
Yeah, it really originated from head shrinkers.
Huh?
Yeah, so literally it's like getting into your head.
Oh,
that's
okay.
What it meant. Right?
Okay,
so,
okay.
Yeah, I thought this gives some interesting context behind the term to our listeners. So please don't see me as a shrink, shrinker, but perhaps more as a career friend.
Okay. I'll see you as my career friend. We welcome your questions too. So please write to us and I'll ask them on your behalf. Send us your questions via LinkedIn. You can find both of us there or write to us at cnapodcasts@mediacorp.com.sg. So Gerald, my question to you for this week is, how do I disconnect from work while on holiday if my colleagues or boss aren't leaving me alone?
Wow, it's a great question. My wife should be on this podcast.
Why? Why?
Because she would tell me, she would remind me
that you are not disconnecting.
Yes. Yeah, but it's also really great because the school holidays are coming up.
Okay.
So I think this is really good for parents who want to take the holiday with their kids. So disconnecting from work really requires a few things. One being the support of your boss, your colleagues, your customers, and even you.
Mm.
So I think many of us may struggle with different aspects of this.
Like you?
For example, for me, I'm often thinking about work even when I'm on holiday. So that's why my wife would be the one to check in on me.
Okay.
How about you, Tiffany?
But that's because you run your own business. Yeah, so it's a bit difficult.
You can't switch off.
Yeah. You can't switch off. I mean, for me, it depends. So if I have a longish holiday, like about 7 days or 10 days, I do realize that for the first 3 days, I cannot disconnect from work. I'll be frantically checking my emails, checking Slack. I'll be lurking. But by about day four, I would really disconnect. I would stop all communication and respect that I have an out-of-office message. Like, I would respect my out-of-office message. So going back to the question, if your colleagues or your bosses don't respect your time off, what can you do?
All right. So I think if your bosses and your colleagues, they may not understand that you need to disconnect, I think what you could do on your part, maybe as best as you can, you still have to update them. You still have to set those clear expectations of, for example, who's your covering officer? When are you going to be back? And also, what are some of the things that they could update you on?
Okay.
Or they should be contacting you for? Because there could be work exigencies.
Oh, right.
So there are sometimes things that you may still want them to contact you, but you have to be clear about what are those things? What are the areas of concern that they can reach you at?
Okay.
So I think having these conversations could be quite useful.
So it's not exactly shutting them out and say, do not talk to me, do not even think about my name, but it's to say that, okay, I know that there will be certain projects or certain people that I would have to be in touch with because maybe I'm the only person who has been in touch with this person, right?
Yes.
Then maybe in those instances, just give me a ping. Just let me know that there's an email in the mailbox so that I can look at it.
Yeah, that's right. And I find that it would be courteous as well to just inform them that you would be taking more time to respond because you can't be checking your phone at all times. You might be on the move. There might not be Wi-Fi.
Mm.
So letting them know that it might take some time for you to respond. It would help them to manage their expectations and also allow you to have that free space to decide when you see that ping on the notification of the message asking you to respond. You could really decide whether you want to.
Okay.
Right at that moment. Yeah.
And you said earlier on to have somebody to cover your role. Is there an expectation that there will always be somebody covering somebody?
Mm. So I think sometimes in your job role may be a solo contributor and you don't have anybody covering for you, then if that's the case, then you really need to inform your stakeholders, your customers about your absence.
Okay.
Nobody will be responding to them and you might want to provide your number just for emergency. And again, what are those situations that they should be contacting you for, right? But if you have a covering officer on the team, then this is where you sit with them to explain to them what are some of the urgent priorities that may need to be fulfilled during your absence because they are the ones covering for that. And of course, you know, when you're on a holiday, remember to buy them something nice when you come back. Yeah, because they are covering, they're doing double work.
Another friction magnet.
Yeah. So no, so buy them something nice that you think that they will enjoy. But yeah, because they are really covering your work and they're helping you to do some things that's important. I mean, I heard horror stories of people just leaving and sometimes their leave time coincides with really important work milestones.
Oh yes.
And then after that, the colleagues who are left working, they are saying that,
so
irresponsible.
Yeah.
You know, so I think having that upfront conversation, explain to them why you couldn't stay back to complete this important milestone is important, right? And one other thing I'm reminded about is remember that we are not indispensable to the company.
Okay, that's a very good point. Yeah,
because we are really not that important. You know, the company is made of many people. The company can still function, right? I had a former colleague who once shared this word of advice to me. He said, don't make ourselves to be more important than what we need to be so that we can truly focus on what's important to us.
That's true. I think oftentimes we think that people are thinking about us quite a lot. In fact, they actually are not thinking about us. But we think that, oh, people are thinking that we are enjoying ourselves too much. So we therefore need to still stay connected with work. We feel bad. We feel that, you know, people are judging us. But actually, you know, most people are just moving on with their work day. They're happy to take over your duties. They understand. I think more importantly, they understand that one day the roles will be reversed and you will have to take on their work as well while they're on holiday.
Yeah.
And so therefore, please respect that protected time with their family or their friends when it's their turn to be on a holiday.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's a really important point because we have to pay it forward.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So far, we've talked about just regular employees. What if you are the boss?
Oh.
How?
We need another AMA on this.
Okay. We'll do another AMA. What if you are the boss and you want to disconnect from work? How do you do that? And then my boss will listen to this. We hope you found this conversation helpful to you. Let us know if you have any feedback. Again, we're on our usual CNA social channels, or you can leave a comment on Spotify. Remember to send your questions to Gerald and I will help you ask them. The team behind the Work It podcast is Crispina Robert, Joanne Chan, Junaini Johari, and Saye Wind. I'm Tiffany.
And I'm Gerald. Have a good work week ahead.